It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is Perino on Politics.
Today is Earth Day, and while President Biden may say he wants a cleaner planet, his green agenda, it's creating a political mess. Welcome to Perino on Politics, where we give you everything you need to know from a 30,000-foot view of this week in politics. Joining me today is the founder and executive director of Power the Future. He's a friend of mine. His name's Daniel Turner, and it's so good to be with you. We are reconnecting after couple of decades, yeah. Almost. He was at the State Department when I was Justice Department, White House Counsel on Environmental Quality. And I think to get started, because one of the things this podcast does is it lets people that listen meet my smart friends. And I try to surround myself with the smartest people. And we're looking at the issue of the environment and energy and how that also, not just the policy of it, which I want to get into, but also the politics of it as well. But before we get started, just tell people a little bit about where you grew up, how you ended up here with me in New York.
Well, first of all, thank you. Thanks for considering me a smart friend. That's quite a compliment. Smart is always a nice thing to be called. I grew up here in New York City.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm a native New Yorker. My family's been here for generations, since basically the revolution.
Wow.
So I'm a born and bred New Yorker, and the accent will come out sometimes.
Okay. I'm hearing it now. Like, getting rid of Middleburg, Virginia.
Exactly. And then I've lived in the country now on a sheep farm for the last couple years after leaving Washington, D.C. And I started Power of the Future. I loved energy issues. I always thought energy was incredibly important. When back in the Bush administration, right, we saw what oil prices, what happened with oil prices and what happened with national security and when the Middle East was in conflict. I always loved this issue, but I have a foot in both camps, and that's really why I started the organization. I grew up in the city, and I understand city life, and I understand the way city people think, but now I live in the country, and our energy comes from rural America, and there's a huge disconnect between the people who make energy policy and the people who live energy policy, and it's made by people here, people in New York, people in D.C., people in San Francisco. Environmental groups are tend to be founded in those big cities. But the men and women who work in oil, gas, and coal, and fracking, and pipelines, they live in the country. And it's very easy for policymakers in the city to say, well, we're going to shut down that coal mine. We're going to close down that pipeline. And those millions of workers never really have a voice or a seat at the table. And that's why I started the organization, to bridge that divide.
One of the ways that we first met was because on his first day in office, I think might have even been the first action, President Biden canceled the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
And subsequently, John Kerry told everyone that worked in the industry just to go get a green job.
Yeah.
I'm so arrogant.
Yeah.
Right? And so how has that gone?
And it's an industry that we have no problem saying that about, right? We have no problem telling energy workers, well, we're just going to get rid of your job. We're just going to close down your coal plant. Do you remember going back a couple years, President Obama, when he was Senator Obama, even joked saying, I'm not going to make coal illegal, but I'll tell you this, if you own a coal mine when I'm president, you're going to go bankrupt. And people applauded and said, yay, that's a good thing. But it's not a good thing if you're one of the millions of people who work in coal and these small towns, very close to where I live now, where the coal mine is every job. The coal mine is the funding for the school. It's the Little League. On the back of the jersey is the name of the coal mine. It's maybe a town of 4,000 people, but everyone works there. And we've shut down these mines, and we've told the people in those towns, welcome to poverty.
Yeah. And, you know, when I know this much, and my fingers are really close together, about energy policy, but more than most, because I cut my teeth on Capitol Hill with the congressman who was the chairman of the Energy Subcommittee at the time. That's when there was one. And then I worked on the White House Counsel on Environmental Quality. I worked at Department of Justice on all of the environmental and energy legal issues that are going out there, which I know you're familiar with. But then when you start digging in a little bit more of just like how energy powers our economy and the infrastructure that hasn't kept up. We haven't built a refinery since the 1970s. And there's these dreams these goals of this beautiful utopia of everybody, everything being powered by wind and solar, mm-hmm. which is not happening. We're not getting there. It's almost amazing to think we don't have more energy, like blackouts yeah. or problems. It's incredible to me that the men and women that work in this industry are able to patch things together and keep energy flowing to all of us so that we can have the economy we have.
Yeah, and we are rolling the dice because every mm-hmm. year we get a little bit more of a risk of blackouts and brownouts. It's common now in heat waves to get a text from the governor saying, hey, everyone, we're going to recommend you don't do laundry at these periods, these peak periods, because your dryer uses a lot of energy. Governor Newsom would tell people not to charge your cars at night because the electric grid couldn't sustain it. But if you want me to drive an electric vehicle, quite frankly, if you're forcing me to drive an electric vehicle because combustion engine cars will be illegal in California in 2030, well, then you have to provide the electricity to charge it at night. Because what if my wife goes into labor, right? What if I have to run my kid to the emergency room? What if there's a fire, and California has fires and we need to escape? There has to be an alternative. And you mentioned infrastructure and building. It's one of the things that I always marvel at, and this is not knocking our current administration, which is very easy to do on energy policy, but let's look at two secretaries. Here's the Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, who says, you know, we're going to get rid of oil, gas, coal, fracking. We're going to make it impossible to bring these to production. We're taking away land and access for oil, gas, coal, et cetera. Here's Pete Buttigieg, who says we're going to have the largest infrastructure package in history. We're going to build all these roads and bridges. But you can't make cement without coal. You can't make steel without coal. You can't build any of these things without oil, gas, and coaL. And I just wonder, does Secretary Haaland and Secretary Buttigieg ever sit down and talk and say, look, your policies are making it really hard for me to carry out my policies? They are. We're not using less oil, gas, and coal. It's just expensive.
I certainly don't think they talk. And one of the things I'm shocked by is that President Biden rarely has a cabinet meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, a cabinet meeting is a great way for a president to show, I'm in charge. I'm bringing the smart people together. Everyone at the table. I want everyone's best ideas on how to combat anti-Semitism today. Mm-hmm. Or next Monday, everyone's coming in here. We're talking about making sure that we have, well, they would never do this, but in a normal administration, you'd say, we want to make sure we have enough energy to do what we need to do to grow this economy and in a way that is funding a lot of the great new science that will get us to a cleaner environment. At what point, Daniel, did we end up with the environment and energy becoming a partisan issue?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody wants a clean environment. There's nobody who's like, yeah, I really would love to, you know, breathe dirty air. We've made so much progress, but it's almost as if on the left, they don't want people to celebrate the progress, or else their idea yeah. of this utopia will go away.
Yeah, and it's this binary choice that they want us to believe we have. We either have fossil fuels or we have a clean environment. And that's such a false choice. President Biden talks about how when he was a kid in the 70s or a young man in the 70s, how there was so much soot on cars, mm-hmm. you had to wipe them clean. I was alive in the 70s. I don't remember. I certainly wasn't driving. I'll take him at his word. Maybe there was. And I've heard other people tell similar stories, especially.
I lived in Denver, and there were days that were yeah. just absolutely terrible, and it's a much better situation today.
That's the point, right? So rather than look at that of saying, look how far we've come, and we're using more fossil fuels than ever before, and we cleaned up this air. We don't have these days anymore that you have to wipe the gunk off your windscreen. But Biden tells those stories as if to give us the impression that this is how things still are. Mm-hmm. We don't have a terrible environment in America. We do things very, very well. And quite frankly, the further you depart from fossil fuel economies, the dirtier their nations get. The ones that pollute the most are not the fossil fuel-rich America, Canada, Western Europe. The ones that are leading the world production pollution are the others. And then what do? Which is where Earth Day becomes kind of funny. We punish ourselves, right? China pumps 90% of the plastic in the ocean. We ban straws. And you say, well, why do we have to give up our straws, right? Why doesn't China have to step up to the
plate? Let's talk about China. I wrote that down here. China, and I put an exclamation point because, you know, they get away with so much on the environment, right?
They do.
And so John Kerry, was when he was climate czar, would go over and basically say, thank you so much for all you're doing. Like, really?
Yeah.
All they're doing. They build a coal-fired power plant a week. They don't care.
Yeah.
And we are holding ourselves back from the clean energy that we can produce and letting China eat our lunch. How does that make any sense?
Exactly. And it's one of my frustrations with the politics of energy policy is that we say we're going to get rid of these carbon-intensive practices because they're bad for the environment. Well, we just offshore them to China, which doesn't have environmental regulations and OSHA, and it doesn't have an EPA to monitor air and water quality. So we're saying, well, we're not going to have coal miners in Wyoming mine coal because that's bad, but we'll allow China to do it poorly and then ship all the goods back across the Pacific.
That doesn't make sense.
Why is that green? And what are they building? They're building a coal plant per week, as you said, and that's the case. And what they're building is they're building wind and solar and EVs because there is no wind factory that runs on wind. There's no solar factory that runs on solar. They all run on fossil fuels. So if you can burn coal to make solar panels in China to make electricity in Wyoming, why can't you just burn coal in Wyoming,
right?
Where we do it cleanly?
I know. My Aunt Patty Sue is in Rollins, Wyoming, and she sends me these pictures of these wind farm. They've taken over so much land.
Yeah.
And also, the incredible thing about, I know you can tell people more about this, but the wind turbine blades, when they reach the end of their life, which is sooner than you think.
About 10 years.
They don't ever disintegrate. They're just in landfills everywhere.
Yeah. And there's a quote by Thomas Sowell that I often use when I'm talking about these issues. It's just brilliant, as obviously Thomas Sowell is. Mm-hmm. And he says, there aren't solutions. There are, in economics, there aren't solutions. There are trade-offs. And wind, solar, EVs, this whole green movement is presented like this is a solution to our environmental problems. One, I don't think we have environmental problems. But even playing devil's advocate, okay, we have environmental problems. Well, these aren't solutions, right? Wind and solar and EVs introduce a whole host of new challenges and problems, from how they're produced to the rare earths to the recycling of batteries, right? There's reports of how EVs are so heavy that they actually produce microparticles of plastic and rubber from the tires because there's that much more weight and that much friction that it's producing a new type of air pollution. Well, I'm not saying that the combustion engine is perfect. Fossil fuels aren't perfect. I will be the first to go through all the problems fossil fuels have. But then the environmental movement has to admit that wind and solar and EVs have a lot of challenges and drawbacks. And if you weigh them in the scales of American economy, national security, and just the quality of life we enjoy, they're not a transition. It's just a failed technology.
And what has happened about either in the current administration, you never hear them talk about the potential and capacity and the great promise of nuclear power, clean nuclear power.
No, and we should have nuclear plants built everywhere. I mean, micro nuclear reactors, because electricity, we know how to make electricity. I mean, when Edison lit up New York, I mean, not far from where we were, and what was it, 18, I'm going to get the date wrong, sorry, but when he lit up the New York Times building, and if anyone has seen this show, The Gilded Age, they actually have an episode
about it,
right? And everyone came to watch. We had never seen light come on. We've seen darkness, but that was the first time in the history of mankind that we saw light at nighttime, and it must have been a marvel, and we take it for granted. But we've been making electricity for a long time. We know how. It should be so abundant, so much an afterthought. And as you said earlier, why has it become so weaponized? Why has it become so politicized or partisan? Like, electricity shouldn't be a complicated issue. We've been doing it for so long, but we've made everything political. And it just,
so also, what about the fact that I just feel that from the regulation standpoint, that we as Americans are being nickel and dime to death, right?
Yeah.
And I'm talking about taking away gas stoves and taking away this or that. I can't stand it that the dishwasher takes 3 hours to run and the clothes aren't getting clean. And people just feel like, again, they want a clean environment, but you're not getting it from those little things that are nickel and diming people to death.
No, and those are the positions that if you are in politics or you want to make some sort of grandiose statement and you say, we pass new stringent regulations on the dryer industry, and you say, great, I have a smart dryer. I joke about it with my husband all the time that it's smart. It beeps and says it's dry, and you stick your hand in and you're like, everything is damp. So you have to turn it on again.
And then you turn it on again. second, and like 3 seconds later, it's like, actually, no, your clothes are dry. Oh my gosh.
Smart dishwashers, smart. And so when do we go back to the folks that push these regulations? If you recall, Gina McCarthy, I don't think she's with the Biden administration anymore, but she was. She was Obama's EPA administrator as well. She talked about how we have hundreds of new regulations on appliances. I didn't know she was an expert at appliances, but obviously she is, and she passed all these regulations. But did we actually accomplish what the goal was? You know, do we accomplish what we call energy efficiency? Because if you're using it twice, you're not really saving energy.
No, it doesn't make sense.
No.
The other thing I wanted to touch base with before we get to more of the politics in the next segment, which is everything the Obama team does, the Biden team does, and now at our schools everywhere, it's so all just about climate change, right? Mm-hmm. And it's become a catch-all term for absolutely everything. They can blame everything on global warming. They can blame everything is for climate change. And it's just become, I think, really watered down in terms of a persuasive issue.
It has. It has. And there's a lot of fear in the climate movement. And that's a kind of a technique to keep people afraid.
Scare
tactics. Uh-huh. Yeah, you have to scare people that climate change is going to come get you. Right? Even the movies are all apocalyptic. The climate change is coming.
Oh my gosh, that one with Leonardo DiCaprio was horrendous. What was that called? That was on Netflix. So everybody at home is screaming at the answer to me.
I can't think of the name.
It was so bad that I just couldn't believe it. I felt like I was watching a parody, but it really is interesting. Like they just talk about climate all the time. Yeah. And if in the polls overall, you do see, especially younger people, they want the president to do more on climate change, right? Yeah. Like he's upside down or underwater on so many issues. And one of them is on climate, but it's because they think he's not done enough.
Yeah, exactly. And so here's a message for those who have young folks at home, kids, and they come back from their lesson and they say, we learned all about, especially on today, Earth Day, we learned all about climate issues and we have to do more as a family. Great. Outside of the HVAC system, the number one driver of electricity and energy in most homes now is gaming systems. So will you give up Fortnite, right? Will you give up? In Wyoming, outside of Cheyenne, they are building a data center that will use more electricity than the city of Cheyenne.
Oh, my God.
And its whole purpose is for the Microsoft Call of Duty.
Just for that?
Just for Call of Duty.
Not for because I've heard about, maybe you could talk just a moment about all the electricity that's needed in order to power the AI revolution.
All that requires a tons of it. So,
But we're not building any more of it.
Well, we're not making enough reliable electricity, but we're building data centers left and right. Where I live in Virginia, we're building data centers all the time. There's huge tax incentives that we're always promised that's going to be great for the county. All we know is that they use a boatload of energy. I mean, every time you use your phone and you say, oh, I don't want to say it because I don't want your phone to go off. Every time you say, hey, S-I-R-I, like, how do I get to this restaurant, right? That requires energy. It requires a ton more energy than you pulling up the yellow pages and finding the name of the pizza, the number of the pizzeria yourself, right? So all of our lifestyle is energy intensive now. And that's just the way things, you want to stream a movie, right? Rather than go to the theater,
energy. So is Microsoft, in building the call center, or the data center, excuse me, will they also build power on top of that?
That's a wonderful question for the governor. Or are the people of Cheyenne just going to get stuck with higher rates because are you building another new? I mean, I think Bill Gates is one of the ones leading the charge saying that they're trying to link Bitcoin mines with small nuclear because he realizes this is the way technology and currencies are going. I'm not a huge crypto
understander. Do not come to me for crypto information.
I don't really get it. But he understands that it's energy intensive, and he's trying to link the two. Holy cow, smart solution. But going back to the young people, right? What can we do about climate change? Because they've been conditioned to be petrified of climate change. Remember those kids in Senator Feinstein's office a couple years ago?
They're at the airport.
Horrible. Like, remember, you felt bad for those kids.
They ambushed her at the airport.
Yeah. 8 and 9 and 10 years old, legit. First of all, that's wrong to do that to a child for any reason at all, but especially on climate change. Mm-hmm. But what can young people do? Well, great. If you give up the gaming, that's something for the environment. Will you give up Uber Eats, right? How many young people, especially in a city like New York, will hit the Uber app and you say, I just want something delivered. I don't want to walk to the pizzeria. I want it brought to me.
Wow.
That's electricity.
I mean, it might take a crisis for people to wake up. But I don't want that, it might take place.
I don't want a crisis at all, and I'm afraid that's where we're headed. But I know Americans, and they do like their livelihood.
Stuff.
Right? We like our conveniences. We like... And we're not going to make those sacrifices willingly unless you're forced. And that's the ban on gas stoves, the ban on...
Yeah.
They will force the behavior they want from you. But boy, that's not really a free country anymore.
When really not, and they're doing it by regulation, not legislation, which is sneaky and not great. We're going on a little long, so I'm gonna stop us there, and we'll be right back with more Perino on Politics.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
And we're back with Perino on Politics. And Daniel, I want to talk a little bit more on the politics of things. Can you tell me about the plight of the workers?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit more about energy and gas workers. Who are they? Where do they live? How do they vote? And is it changing?
Yeah, the energy, oil and gas fields are found where they are. There's a lot of them that we're not allowed to have access to for environmental regulations, state regulations. It seems that, you know, the fear of peak oil or peak gas is never being realized. The more we look, the more we find.
But
so you find these clusters of where they work, but they live kind of everywhere. I go to the North Slope of Alaska. Very few people live there, but they'll do 3 weeks on or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and that's just their livelihood. You'll find a lot of coal miners will do the same, and they live in these, as they call them, man camps, which are quite literally like dorms, and this is what you do, and they make a very good living, but it is definitely hard work, and you're away from your family, but they're compensated, but they live, you know, all over the nation, especially a lot of the welders that do pipeline work. You met a number of them when they closed down Keystone. They'll go on these projects for 6 months, 7 months, and then go home. The interesting thing is that they're union guys and women, the men and women, they're blue collar. They probably grew up in Democrat households because that's kind of the way we always thought of blue collar workers in America. But that's changed over time because they see an administration that has targeted them. You mentioned John Kerry's line, which was just so condescending, that we've given them the choice to find a green job. And you say, well, that's not going to help pay the mortgage next week.
And also, we talked to them, and I would say to my man, Bugsy. I say, Bugsy, have you found a green job yet? He's like, hell no. There's no. What are they talking about?
Yeah.
And it is heartbreaking. And it's interesting how the Democrats have walked away from a lot of blue-collar workers in order to embrace affluent white liberals.
Yeah. Who live
and chasing after the youth vote.
Yeah.
As they play Call of Duty and don't realize what they're talking about.
Yeah, and that the affluent white vote has a very fossil fuel intense lifestyle, right? They're never giving up their and I wouldn't either. If I was John Kerry and I had a private jet, I would use it.
Oh my gosh, the places I would go with my dog. I'd come visit you at the sheep farm.
You're always welcome. He's not a herder, is he?
No, he's a pointer, though.
Okay, so he'll let us know where they are. They're not giving up their lifestyle, and I don't want them to. America doesn't want them to, but they are pushing policies that are telling us that we have to give up our lifestyle. You know, if there's a gas stove ban, they're going to have carve-outs.
What about Hispanic oil and gas workers in Texas, elsewhere? Are they sort of taking a look away from the Democratic Party, maybe not fully ready to embrace the Republican Party, but they might like Trump.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you see that?
But they like their jobs. And I think that's going to be a big difference. I think it was in the first Trump administration. 2020 is such a weird year.
Yeah.
And not because
it's hard to compare.
And it's all COVID related. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can talk about J6 and you can talk about a lot of stuff. But 2020 was the COVID year. And it's such an anomaly. But I think a lot of oil and gas and coal and fracking and pipeline and truckers. We haven't even talked about truckers, right? There are new EV mandates for trucks. Not necessarily what I do for a living, but if you're a trucker and you're like, wait, I can't afford the new rigs.
Oh my gosh, let's talk about this real quickly. So on the trucker front, I talked to these people from the trucking administration and in California as they try to put forward these new regulations for electric trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a guy who he needs to make X number of stops in a day in order to make the money that he's supposed to make and the deliveries he's supposed to make. He would do that. He would fill up one time in the morning and one time in the evening. With the EV, he was having to fill up 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Cost taking him half hour to 45 minutes, maybe an hour, I think they said, to recharge.
Mm-hmm.
He missed half of his deliveries.
Yeah.
So he got half the money.
Yep.
So that doesn't make sense. And you said in 2030, the combustion engine
sales,
you are no longer going to be in all of California, which means, everybody, the reason they do this in California is because it forces the rest of the country to do it as well, because California is the largest market.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
It is. I tell people, if you have money, you should buy a car dealership on the Nevada border, because that's just what people are going to do, right? They're just going to go out of state and buy.
You'd be allowed to do that.
You would be allowed to buy out of state, but you cannot buy one in the state of California. And this is just a level of absurd. The trucker is a great example. We force these criteria, but we never ask, is it actually working, right? If you are, and look at the lifestyle that we live now. We like things delivered to our home. Mm-hmm. And it's why Jeff Bezos is worth $200 billion, right? We like things delivered. But if Mr. Truck Driver guy can get it to you in one day, but now he has to get it to you in 2 days because of all the stops, the charging, he's still getting paid, right? That means you're just paying more to get your product. And are you willing to pay X number, X percent more? And I don't think the American people are. And I'm thinking a number of people remember, it wasn't that long ago that, yes, we talk about gas prices, right? Gas was $2 mm-hmm. a gallon. But you look at your electric bill, your heating bill, and you mm-hmm. say, why is everything so expensive? Food. I mean, if I didn't do these policies, I would do ag and farm policy, because I love being a farmer.
Well, they're all really connected, right?
They're all
connected. You think about the electricity that it takes to power a grocery store.
Yeah.
And that's another reason that prices are high. Let's talk about another group of people, which are the protesters, like the climate protesters.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a less persuasive group of people than those that are throwing soup on priceless works of art?
Yeah.
Cementing their hands or gluing their hands to a highway to prevent mm-hmm. people from going through.
Yeah.
Is this having an effect at all about how people feel about climate change? Either way?
I think it creates such a level of ire that it shows, even if you were neutral on climate issues or if you were pro-environment climate issues, if you're stuck in traffic because you can't get to JFK Airport because there are protesters, that's changing your opinion on them, right? And that's now the ugly face of the environmental left. And I kind of chuckle that their crazy glue is made from oil. Right, the signs that they are holding about, stop this and all that, they're all made from oil. They're water bottles. We could walk to Central Park later and see climate change activists. You know, all of them, their stages, their banners, their music,
everything.
It's all oil and gas, and they have generators powering the stage with that run on diesel, and there's just a huge disconnect. And rather than look at this industry with such disdain, because they've been conditioned that they're the bad guys, evil, greedy, right? We hear all the name big oil. Rather than look at them that way, why don't you look at it and say, like, this is an amazing product that these mm-hmm. millions of men and women have turned into, glasses and microphone stands and
IV tubes.
If
they would just work together. I remember talking to this young person who said he really wanted to work in, for the environment, right, on environmental issues and energy issues for the environment. I said, oh, wow, you should go work for Chevron. He's like, I don't want to work for an oil company. I said, who do you think has all the money to invest in great new technologies? And Chevron, Exxon, all the big oil companies are pouring a ton of money into renewables. I did want to ask you about this on the politics front. So we kind of know where Biden and Trump are. Trump says, I'm going to open it all up for responsible energy development. Mm-hmm. He's not going to destroy the environment, but that's what they'll say. Anyway, mm-hmm. Biden is like, we want to shut it down and we're going to do even more. We're going the California route. There's a lot of legal questions that are going around. The Supreme Court might weigh in. But there is an interesting thing. NBC News had a poll out on Sunday, April 21st, saying that RFK Jr., actually hurts both Biden and Trump.
Which I saw would that.
Be on, and he's on the ballot in Michigan. Mm. He might be in North Carolina, maybe in Nevada. He's like trying to be very strategic of where he goes. Mm. And these younger environmentalists might decide to go with him.
Yeah.
And then what?
And if Biden could be a little bit more radical, he would be RFK Jr. RFK Jr. is fairly radical on environmental and climate issues. And it's going to be interesting the way it plays out. I think at the Senate level, there are so many Senate races where energy is going to have a huge impact. Look at Pennsylvania, right? The second largest natural gas producer in the nation. The Biden administration announces this pause on LNG exports. 500,000 people work in this industry in Pennsylvania. And if all of them say, I can't vote for Bob Casey, who supports Joe Biden.
He's the incumbent senator, Casey, and he's running for re-election. He's got, actually, it's really interesting, his low name ID in Pennsylvania. Although he's been there and his dad was there before him, he is being challenged by Dave McCormick, who is will be the Republican nominee after the primary vote tomorrow. And I think of Pennsylvania, Biden considers it the keystone to his reelection.
He does. And he plays the Scranton card, and yet he pushes policies that hurt a lot of oil and gas and coal and fracking and agriculture in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, I know, is a difficult state to win, right? The Philly suburbs dominate the state. But there are a lot of people in the Pittsburgh suburb, in the T, as they call it, Lancaster County, mm-hmm. across the north, mm-hmm. and they work in this industry. And if you work in natural gas and you say, well, where's my senator been on LNG pause of natural gas? You can go to across the border, Ohio, Sherrod Brown, same deal. And
he's the incumbent senator of Ohio running against Bernie Moreno, the yep. Republican.
And I got to tell you, I've been doing this for a while. I know you've been doing this for a while. I can't think of two senators who have kind of less impressive Senate careers. Like Casey in Pennsylvania is looking for his fourth term, 18 years. In 18 years, I can't think of a legislation, a floor speech, a moment, and oversee. I can't think of anything where I say, oh, Bob Casey led that. So why would you want reelection? Or why would I vote for you yeah. if I work in this industry and you don't care about my values?
You wrote this, right? This is the New York Post.
I did. That's why it's on my mind.
This is an op-ed in the New York Post that ran on Sunday. It says Dems like Bob Casey, who backed Biden's war on energy, will pay for it this November. You think he could lose?
I think he could lose. I think if the 500,000...
And the energy could be one of the reasons.
Energy could be... And not just because I work in this job directly, mm-hmm. but because I see my electric bill and my gas bill and the future of Pennsylvania. Oil and gas, and especially natural gas, is so big in Pennsylvania that even John Fetterman flip-flopped on fracking when the election was tighter against Dr. Oz.
Yeah.
And he retracted. He said, you know what? I've restudied and I support this industry. Because he realized, holy cow, I need 500,000 people to peel off some of them to my side.
Everyone's new favorite senator, John Fetterman of Pennsylvania. Who knew?
Yeah, and after a year and a half in the Senate, he's yeah. totally outshadowing the guy who's been there for 17
years. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel, we'll be right back with more Perino on Politics. And welcome back to Perino on Politics. This is where I like to ask my smart friends, what am I missing? What do you pay attention to in an election year that I should focus on?
I think the way this plays out in the states from the political side is very, very important. If I were advising any candidate, and I don't, I'm a C4. We don't get involved.
What's that mean, C4?
As a 501C4, we are allowed to do the IRS tax status allows us to do issue advocacy, but we don't do electioneering. I cannot tell people, you go out and vote for this person or mm-hmm. call your senator. I'm not allowed to do that. I can just educate folks on energy issues, which is what we've been trying to do it. And I try to do it specifically from the jobs perspective. But if you're in this space, and it's an election year, Ohio, Pennsylvania, even New Mexico, right? Domenici's daughter, I saw, is the former senator there, is running, raised a lot
She's
of
a
money.
Republican.
Republican, mm-hmm. raised a lot of money first quarter. That's a huge race against Martin Heinrich, another senator from New Mexico who's very unimpressive. Handsome guy. I don't know what he's done for the last 12, 18 mm-hmm. years, but New Mexico is a huge oil and gas state. And where are those folks going to mm-hmm. cast their vote? So mm-hmm. I would be making energy an issue across mm-hmm. the board, not just for jobs, but on the price of good, on the price of food, right? How much agriculture is so energy intensive. If you're tired of $4 eggs, we need energy. If you're tired of chopped meat, that's $12.99 a pound, we need more energy. Mm-hmm. It's driven the inflation to the point that it's breaking American families. That would wow. be a huge
So push. That's what you are paying attention to,
100%.
Right now.
Yeah, that's for mm-hmm. me is very important. For the environmental group, and this isn't necessarily election related, but it's just a conversation I'd love to have. And it's why I'm honored to be here, because it's an actual conversation. I wish I could have conversations with my direct opponent, like an honest conversation, but we don't. We just yell at each other.
Who is your direct opponent?
Groups like the Sierra Club okay. or the National Resources Defense Council, mm-hmm. League of Conservation Voters, the ones that pay a lot of these mm-hmm. activists to throw Campbell's soup mm-hmm. at Degas. I would love to ask them some questions and just have an understanding. We've talked about electricity and we've talked about, but fossil fuels make so many products that we don't have a substitute for. And we say, well, we're going to have wind and solar and EVs solve all our problems. But not long ago, my dad passed away. And when I was with him in the hospital, I was take my job with me everywhere I go. I was looking at the IV tube in his arm, right? And the IV tube is plastic and it's made from oil. And the needle of the IV tube is forged by coal. And the chemicals in the IV tube mm-hmm. are derivatives of natural gas. And Purell and the bedpans. And the nurses would come in and they would clean their hands and put on gloves. Mr. Turner, let's take a look. And they would throw them away because it's sanitary. Dad died with dignity and in comfort because of fossil fuels. And what's the solution to that? And if you say, well, okay, well, then we need some fossil fuels. Well, then where does that line get drawn, right? Do we, if we just have enough fossil fuels for those products, well, the price of those products is going to go through the roof. Now the rich people can die with dignity, and the poor, now we're back to the 17th century, where the poor die in misery and poverty, or like we see in a lot of developing nations.
Right.
And those are conversations that I don't think we ever talk about. We say we're going to get rid of no more fossil fuels, keep it in the ground. But there's nothing dignified about forcing people into poverty and hunger. And that's the future if this
we should be helping
continues.
Them develop it cleanly.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful story about your father.
Thank you.
And I want to end with, I have a little quiz, but I want to ask you, what's the best part about being a sheep farmer?
This is such a difficult world we live in that I can totally unplug. I go back to my sheep farm. It's quiet. I don't have, you know, the media bombarding me in my ear. I don't have politicians yelling at me. So I love the peace and quiet. I'm close enough to D.C. that I can get there when I need to. I can come to New York to see you, see family.
Do you get close to any of those sheep?
Yes. We're raising a very, very friendly breed. We had a couple ewes die in childbirth, so the babies are bottle raised right now.
Oh, yeah.
So they kind of live with us. But full disclosure, I married a farmer. He grew up on 25,000 acres in the Australian outback.
Wow.
So he's
amazing.
Which is kind of like Wyoming, right? Yeah. It's dry and hot and windy.
And do you have an Australian shepherd?
We have an Australian cattle dog, a blue heeler.
That's who my grandfather had those. And the last two he had before when he passed, Ray and Floyd.
Yeah.
And they love to work.
Brilliant dogs.
Oh my gosh, they could do anything.
So much energy, a lot of, and they can herd. And it's the only dog, Governor Dunleavy in Alaska has them as well. And he and I always talk about them. And he says, it's the only dog you can talk to like a person. And I will, the older one is Murray. And I'll just say, Murray, go stand in front of that gate.
And he'll go do it. I know.
Right over
my grandfather could do a little whistle. You're like, and they would go get the mares and bring them back and put them in a corral. It was incredible. And it's been a great, great chance to talk with you. And
thank you.
Energy and environment, such important issues. And we didn't even touch on conservation efforts, but we will in the future. I loved doing this with you.
Thank you.
Here's a quiz, okay? It's multiple choice. The very first Earth Day led to the eventual creation of the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're going to get this. This is too easy. Which president established the EPA? Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, or Richard Nixon?
Richard Nixon.
I knew that. Okay. Earth Day was first celebrated in 1970 and recognized by 20 million people that year. Daniel, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.